So our next speaker is Elin Wronki, who has extensive experience in the field of human rights. She works as senior advisor in human rights and development at the Danish Institute for Human Rights, where she has, among other things, been working with capacity building in close cooperation with International Coordinating Committee of National Institutions for the Promotion and Protection of Human Rights. Prior to joining the IHR, she worked at the International Federation for Human Rights for many years as the head for globalization and human rights. And we are particularly happy to have someone from the Danish Institute here, as they work so much with practically applying these principles, both together with the state, with business, and with civil society. So, Elin, please.
So, just a few words about the Danish Institute for Human Rights. So, we are Denmark's national human rights institution, and of course, task is looking at the respect for human rights in Denmark. But probably one of the specific things in our mandate is that we also work internationally. And I work within the international department, where we specialize, amongst other things, on business and human rights issues, and we've been working on those issues since the late 90s, more or less. And we work on business and human rights directly with businesses, so we do help businesses to apply human rights due diligence in their operations, and we also work with states and civil society to promote the implementation of the UN guiding principles by states. And I've put up the a toolkit that we published now about 1.5 years ago about how to develop national action plans on business and human rights. National action plans for business and human rights has been one of the actions that have been recommended since the adoption of the UN guiding principles, first by the European Union back in 2011, and then repeatedly by the Council of Europe and by the UN Working Group in 2014. And as it looks now, this is where we are in terms of national action plans. So if you look at it in detail, you will see that the list I've put up and the countries that are on the map are not exactly matching. And this is because there are some processes that have not really started, but where some countries have said they were developing the national action plans, but where they haven't done anything, I haven't put up the names. But as you can see, it's mostly European countries who have released their national action plans, including Sweden, of course, and now one country from the Global South has also joined the list, which is Colombia, which very recently released its national action plan. But there's a lot of countries that are actually looking at this as a useful tool for implementing their human rights obligations as stated in the UN guiding principles. I found the study very interesting, and as you highlighted, it's probably the only study so far that is looking in great detail of how the UN guiding principles are both relevant for development cooperation, but also how a country is actually living up to the UNGPs with regard to that area. And why I think it's relevant, it's because of course, the UN guiding principles shift a bit the debate around corporate responsibility by reaffirming that the state is the primary duty bearer and has a critical role to play to make sure that businesses respect human rights. And I think this is one of the most important things that the UN guiding principles did, was put the state back on the stage of corporate responsibility. The guiding principles also say that the state should be exemplary, and one should expect that, in particular with regard to development aid, where you have some expectation that this should lead to improvement of human rights and a better life for people, UNGPs should be fully integrated. Then, as also highlighted in the study, development aid is often channeled through state-owned enterprises, be it export credit agencies or development banks, etc. And those fall under both Pillar 1, where the state has a responsibility to make sure that the enterprises it owns or controls respect human rights even more than for other businesses. The UN guiding principles are very clear on that the state should take additional steps. And state-owned enterprises also fall under Pillar 2, so they also have their own responsibility to respect. The guiding principles say that the state should encourage and require, in some specific situation, human rights due diligence by state-owned enterprises. And in particular, where there are significant risks to human rights, we're talking here about projects to promote enterprises that are working in mining in Africa. We all know that this is a very high-risk area for human rights. I'm not going to draw many stories. I'm sure you've all heard about negative impacts of mining in developing countries, so I think it is very a very good example to look at mining. Then I think, and that was also highlighted by the authors of the study, that there is a trend today of looking at how the private sector should be contributing to development objectives, and this has come up more and more in the debate around the sustainable development goals, and there are a lot of expectations that business and the private sector should play a role to achieve the sustainable development goals. So I think it's very relevant and timely to look at the UNGPs in development aid. I looked a bit at other national action plans to look at what they say about development cooperation. First, I have to say that of all the national action plans that have been published, there is a wide diversity of plans. They don't all follow the same structure. If you are interested in looking at the good sides and the bad sides of the different national action plans that have been published, I invite you to look at an assessment that has been made by the European Coalition for Corporate Justice and the International Corporate Accountability Roundtable, following the criteria that we have developed in our toolkit on how a national action plan should be developed and what it should look at. And there you will see that there's some criticism around both the process and the content of some of the action plans. So I'm not going to go into details about that, but we can go back to it in the panel if you're interested. Some of the action plans that have been published by European states, they only look externally. So, of course, there could be some space for discussing development cooperation. Other plans that are now being developed by developing countries, they only look internally, and obviously they won't look at development cooperation, although it could be interesting for them to also look at the development aid that they receive and how is that consistent with the UN guiding principles. Overall, most of the plans do say something about policy coherence and that they want to promote policy coherence across the different ministries, etc. But there is very little concrete action in that regard in most of the action plans. Overall, I would say there's no consistent approach to development cooperation. It is quite high up in the Swedish NAP, National Action Plan, also in the Norwegian Action Plan, and also in the Danish one, almost totally absent from the UK and Netherlands plan of action. Export credit agencies is one area that is addressed by most of the action plans, and this is probably because those are spelled out very specifically in the UN guiding principles, so I think it was difficult not to be looking at them. And there's also a very diverse approach to state-owned enterprises. So, for example, Finland and Sweden have addressed this quite significantly in their action plan with their ownership policies and really spelling out how the state is going to make sure that the UNGPs are integrated fully by state-owned enterprises, and other plans are totally silent on this. Of course, it could depend on whether the state has a big ownership in companies, but I think it has to be said that it's quite substantial in the Swedish action plan, and this is a good point. Now, national baseline assessment. The Danish Institute has recommended that before doing a national action plan, there should be an assessment of where the main gaps are in a country's implementation of the UN guiding principles. Unfortunately, so far, the action plans that have been published have not been preceded by a national baseline assessment, but there are a number of countries that have now embarked on doing national baseline assessment, either on a request by the state. For example, in Germany, the National Human Rights Institution did a baseline assessment. In the United States, it was some NGOs that have been doing a national baseline assessment. And in Denmark, we are actually working on one at the moment. And you can see the draft report that is going to come out in a couple of days for consultations. There is not as much information as we would have wished in those national baseline assessments about development cooperation, but I can just share a couple of findings. Basically, in Denmark, and I don't have much time, so I'll only speak about Denmark here, the investment fund for development, IFU, and the export credit agencies, both of them had quite substantial policies and procedures to screen projects that they're funding and also to monitor them. Danida, who has a number of partnerships with business through different tools, had, of course, a high-level policy, but it was not very clear how those requirements for respect of human rights was being integrated in practice and how it's being monitored by Danida. So we could say that there's a parallel with your own findings regarding CEDA on the one side and Sweet Fund and the Export Credit Agency on the other side. Just a couple of reflections on your key findings. I found it very interesting, and it has to be said that it is a good point that Sweden has made very clear that it expects from those agencies and enterprises that they do respect the UN guiding principles. So it's obviously the first step towards integrating those principles in practice. This is not the case in other countries, for example, in Denmark, where some of these institutions do not have in their mandate the obligation to respect the UN guiding principles. About the performance of state agencies versus state-owned companies, I think this is a very interesting finding, and it's a little bit counterintuitive. You would expect that the agencies in charge of development aid are performing the best, whereas sometimes it's more the companies that are aware of the risks because they have been under pressure by civil society for a long time. So I think this is quite an interesting finding, and we probably need to do more work with states and governments to make sure that they live up to their obligations under the UNGPs. The third finding, and I would just echo what the authors have said, that there is a need for increased transparency and reporting, and also a similar point for Denmark. Danida has some procedures on how they screen projects, etc., but this is not necessarily public. More like internal staff working documents. So to conclude, just a couple of further suggestions. I would have liked to see also in the study some recommendations about human rights impact assessment. So policies and procedures is good, but what do you expect from those institutions in terms of actually assessing the impacts of the project that they support on the ground. A grievance mechanism, more and more it is common to see that also development agencies or export credit agencies set up grievance mechanism. I didn't really see that in the study, so it's more of a question, why didn't you look at that aspect? I think another thing to be discussed is also how do you integrate business and human rights in country or sector programs that CEDA or other agencies might be developing. Maybe my last point is about looking also at a human rights-based approach to the project that involves private businesses. And in Denmark, we have done a little bit of a study around how does Danish development aid which CELS has a new heart-based approach, actually integrate that in projects. And we found that sometimes, especially for projects relating to infrastructure or green growth, where private businesses might be involved, the human-based approach is not necessarily consistent. So I'll end here because I already spoke too much. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Elin, for a very interesting presentation.